Epilogue. The Prophet. Night has fallen in the Emberwood, bringing a comfortable darkness that covers the land in shadow. The first few flakes of the winter snows begin to fall, carried on an icy wind coming down from the mountains. An impatient crowd gathers in the grove, their meeting place far from any town or village. On one end of the clearing, masked men stand guard to make sure that their group is not being watched. On the other, a thick wall of pulsing blue energy rises from the ground, a magical shield ascending toward the heavens. It's the very edge of civilization, a barrier which no man or demon can pass through. The Ark of Radiance. Sitting cross-legged in the grass with his hood pulled up, the prophet rests in quiet meditation, facing the vaguely opaque wall of energy and waiting, always waiting. The arc glows with a soft light, swirling patterns obscuring the view on the other side, while a gentle hum fills his ears and his thoughts. Too many in Tarsinium, the Ark is a thing of beauty, a marvel to behold. But to me, it is nothing more than an abomination. One of the chosen, a man named Gris, approaches the prophet from the side. Crossing his arms in front of him, he assumes a decidedly irreverent posture. "My lord," he says, muffled voice full of annoyance, "how much longer will it be? We're close to running out of supplies." Keeping his eyes trained on the wall of light ahead of him, the prophet's hands rest easily on his knees. "One doesn't demand an audience with the R'lar, Gris. One must wait until they are ready to be seen."
"Yes, but my lord," Gris replies insistently, "we've been waiting here for weeks, and still no sign of them. Perhaps we're in the wrong place?"
"No," the prophet responds, turning to regard him from the depths of his hood. "We're in the right place. Have patience, my child. It won't be much longer. I can feel it." This seems to placate the underling. He is merely voicing the opinion that most of the other chosen are too timid to admit. Like children waiting upon their elders, they cannot understand their place. They wish to have their questions answered immediately and without reservation. Gris wanders away from the prophet, who remains and continues to reminisce in the mysterious light of the Ark. "I was like him once, zealous and always wanting to act before thinking. Experience has taught me to not be so hasty. In the Harbinger, zealotry is paramount, but even more important than that is wisdom, the ability to discern the best course of action before blindly moving forward. That is what placed me in the position I'm in today. That is what has turned me from a follower into a leader of men. That doesn't matter any more, though," he thinks with a small knowing smile. "Soon, mankind will be transformed into something greater." Hours pass in the night, the chilly wind causing the trees to shake off their last few remaining leaves. The chosen continue their vigil, though not without many of them grumbling complaints when they think the prophet isn't listening. Suddenly, the swirling wall of energy begins to shift, spinning in a circular pattern and bulging outward like a bubble. This movement sends ripples through the radiant veil, like a stone thrown into a pond. It even starts changing colors, shifting from a soft blue to a dull, translucent white. The prophet pushes to his feet and steps back, sensing that the other members of the chosen have noticed the change as well. They whisper excitedly to one another, gathering around their leader as the arc continues to warp.
"Silence!" he hisses, cutting them off as the bubble grows less opaque.
Through the milky coloring, they can see shapes on the other side, looming like shadows from the dead lands beyond.
"This is it," the prophet thinks in adulation. "He's finally come. Asmodeus, the Prince of Darkness himself, returning to the lands of men.
The rippling abruptly shifts, leaving behind a gaping hole in the middle of the magical wall. Standing just beyond, in a world that looks much different from the verdant forest in which the Chosen stand, is a small entourage of demons, their red eyes glowing bright in the darkness. Gorgons, with their multicolored skin and horned heads, stand holding the leashes of snarling darkhounds, their claws digging into the dry earth and their teeth dripping with saliva. A figure steps out from among them, passing through the hole and into the presence of the Chosen standing in the glade. He stands taller than any of the other Gorgons, with four powerful arms and enormous wings sprouting from his back. They blot out the light as they spread to their full, impressive wingspan, casting the forest in an angry red glow. Furling his wings, they trail behind him like a long, blood-colored cloak, his form resplendent in polished black armor. His skin is in stark contrast to his armor, and unlike the rest of the Gorgons in attendance, it's an ashen white, with horns twisting in an intricate pattern atop its head, wreathing him in power and glory. His gleaming ruby-colored eyes burn with malevolence. Everybody drops to their knees. The prophet prostrates himself in deference, but he can still see that wherever the great prince walks, the grass withers and dies. Asmodeus stops just before them, sweeping his gaze around the forest and taking in a deep breath through his nose.
"Ah, Tarsinium," he says in a deep and resonant voice. "At long last, your defiance is at an end."
"My lord prince," the prophet utters, keeping his head bowed low, "we, your humble servants, are not worthy to be in your presence." The demonic lord seems to find this amusing, and he regards them for a long moment as if considering whether to speak with such lowly personages or destroy them with a wave of his hand.
"Arise, mortals," he says at last. "You have done well in coming to this place. Your obedience pleases me."
Shakily, they get to their feet. The awe and trepidation is palpable as they gaze upon a true living god. Looking up at Asmodeus, the prophet meets his impressive visage, though every fiber of his being wants to tear his eyes away and grovel at his feet.
"We live to serve you, my lord. Simply ask, and we will carry out your will."
Again he seems amused by this, like an emperor observing the devotion of a rabble of children. He nods, his horned head bobbing in acceptance.
"The time has come for our return," he declares. "This sacrilege, this arc of radiance, must be cast down so that my armies can cover this land like a cleansing fire, purifying everything in its path."
He turns and gestures for one of the Gorgons on the other side of the arc to come forward. The demon, a pale comparison standing next to the Prince of Darkness, steps through the hole carrying something covered in a black cloth.
"I spoke before of a gift,"
Asmodeus continues, accepting the item from the Gorgon, who quickly returns to the land beyond.
"This is an opportunity for your people to become useful instruments in my hands."
He removes the cloth, revealing a jagged knife resting in the palm of his hand. The dagger, black like polished obsidian, glows with an otherworldly green light, and in its pommel is set a flawless emerald, which sparkles with a life of its own. The prophet steps forward, his eyes wide as he beholds the magnificent weapon. He reaches forward, taking it from Asmodeus as he proffers it to him.
"This dagger is the tool you will use to destroy the Ark of Radiance once and for all,"
he says, watching him imperiously as the prophet steps back, the weapon cradled in his hands.
"The Ark is failing, but my minions are impatient. We cannot allow the mages to have the time they need to mend the damage time has wrought."
The prophet looks fervently up at the prince.
"You bestow a great honor upon us."
"With this, you may become enshrined in glory. You may be elevated above any other human who has ever lived upon this world. However,
his lips twist into a menacing snarl,
should you fail, you will be punished. Not even death will save you from the torment I shall inflict upon your souls.
The warning strikes fear into the heart of the prophet, but the promised rewards overshadow that fear. He strokes the blade lustfully, eyes reflecting the infernal green light.
We shall not fail you, my lord prince. This I swear.
He nods again.
See that you do not.
The arc begins to ripple once more, the swirling picking up again as the hole slowly closes.
I will return,
as Medeus says, turning and walking back to his subordinate demons.
When next we meet, I will be at the head of my army. Do not disappoint me, prophet. The fate of this world now rests in your hands.
Stepping through the barrier, he falls once more into shadow as the hole seals shut. The arc shimmers and becomes increasingly less translucent, bulging inward and then smoothing out as it turns from white to blue. Soon, it is smooth once more, and the prophet is left alone with the other chosen, the weight of responsibility resting heavily on his shoulders. They crowd reverently around their leader, whispering and pointing at the dagger that he holds like a newborn babe. It almost seems alive, like a splinter of the 11 hells themselves forged into this elegant form. As he looks up to the spot where the prince had stood, he sees only withered grass, a patch of blackened earth bearing testament to his overwhelming power. Suppressing a shiver, the prophet looks to his followers, their eyes alight with renewed energy.
Let us get back to Tarsus. I know what we must do.